Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, April 8th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
Oil gains as fighting in Libya escalates.
It's going to be a more bullish outcome than people were thinking for prices this year.
There's guarded optimism around U.S.-China trade talks.
All these negotiations, we just get closer and closer.
Plus, Theresa May searches for a breakthrough on Brexit.
Homeland Security Secretary Nielsen has been ousted, and the tax return tug of war continues between the White House and House Democrats. I'm John Tucker. Those stories straight ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Nets with a win at Indiana clinched a playoff berth. Knicks won 2. Yankees hit 7 homers to win at Baltimore. A Mets rally fell short against Washington.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Investors are kicking off the week in a cautious mood. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 5 points, Dow futures down 62, NASDAQ futures down 14. The DAX in Germany is down 0.4%, the CAC in Paris down 0.2%, and the FTSE 100 is down 0.3%. The Nikkei 225 in Japan was down 0.2%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong gained 0.5%. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 2.49%, yield on the 2-year 2.33%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.4% or 28 cents to $63.36 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.4% or $5.50 to $13.01.10 an ounce. The euro at 1.1234 against the dollar, the yen at 111.46. Nathan.
Karen, there continue to be positive signs around U.S.-China trade talks.
All these negotiations, we just get closer and closer.
White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow tells CBS there is guarded optimism around negotiations.
This coming week, there'll be a lot of teleconferencing among the top-tier people to continue the discussions. We're closer than we ever have been before. A lot of very difficult topics for the first time are on the table and being resolved. I think that's terribly important.
Kudlow speaking on CBS Face the Nation, as heard here on Bloomberg Radio.
Meanwhile, in China, state media is also reporting progress on trade talks. Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie has the latest from Beijing.
China's state-run Xinhua News Agency said progress had been made at the most recent talks, even if remaining issues will be, quote, hard nuts to crack. Xinhua said negotiators discussed a range of issues, including technology transfers, IP protections, non-tariff barriers, the trade balance, and enforcement. In Beijing, Tom McKenzie, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Tom. Assets in Asia began the week on a cautious note, with the yen strengthening and stocks finishing the session little changed. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us with details from Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Well, that stronger yen saw the Nikkei 225 close 0.2% lower in Tokyo. Chinese equities gave up earlier gains as trading resumed following Friday's public holiday. The Shanghai Composite virtually unchanged after earlier gaining more than 1%. Stocks in Hong Kong held above 30,000 points during trade. That's levels not seen since June. The rally in oil, iron ore and copper futures pushed Australia's resource-heavy market higher by 0.6% in Sydney, while South Korea KOSPI index closed flat in Seoul. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. Oil is gaining as fighting in Libya escalates. The government there is attacking forces loyal to strongman Khalifa Haftar, who's trying to enter the capital city of Tripoli. Bloomberg's Remy Innocencio reports.
The conflict is now on the southern door of Tripoli. Over the past few days, we've been seeing UN-backed government jet fighters trying to take out the forces of strongman or warlord Khalifa Haftar. And what's at risk is the exports that are headed out of the country there. Looking ahead, there is some concern.
And that concern is oil prices extending last week's gains. Ed Morris is head of commodities research at Citigroup.
We see what's unfolding in Tripoli, and we also see what's unfolding in Algeria. It's just a minor supply risk at the moment, but this is what happens with petrostates. It's one of the several factors that make us look like it's going to be a more bullish outcome than people were thinking for prices this year.
And Morrissey's Brent crude hitting $75 a barrel in the next 3 months. Right now, it is trading at $70.65 a barrel.
Meanwhile, Saudi Aramco kicks off a multi-billion dollar bond offering this week, and investors are already crowding in. Aramco chairman and Saudi energy minister Khalid Al-Falah tells Bloomberg's Manus Krani, demand already totals $30 billion.
It's still dynamic. I think the books have been not been closed, but it's upward of both numbers.
It's north of $30 billion?
I believe so.
Saudi Aramco spent last week drumming up support for its debut bond offering at presentations from New York to Chicago, Singapore, and Tokyo.
In the UK, Theresa May is still in search of a Brexit plan that can pass Parliament.
We must deliver Brexit. That means we need to get a deal over the line. And that's why we've been looking for new ways, a new approach, to find an agreement in Parliament.
But that agreement is once again proving elusive. Bloomberg's Ewan Potts joins us live from London with the very latest. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Still searching for a compromise. Theresa May is hoping to restart talks with her rival Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn. The UK Prime Minister is warning that the UK may never leave the EU if the two can't reach an agreement. She has until Wednesday. That's when the other 27 EU leaders get together for a special summit. They'll discuss her request for a delay to Brexit until June 30th. The EU is mulling a much longer but flexible extension. One senior member of May's top team said that sounds like purgatory. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ewan, thank you. On the corporate front, Boeing is cutting production of its 737 jet. It's a move to limit financial damage from the grounding of the aircraft as it waits for regulatory approval on a software update. Boeing said on April 1st it would be several weeks before that software patch is submitted to the FAA. Fitch Ratings Director Akash Gupta.
The impact is likely to increase in the second quarter. What we need to see is what's the delay in regulatory approvals. So if it takes several months, the impact on Boeing would be higher.
The Federal Aviation Administration vows a rigorous review of Boeing's software update, while authorities in Europe, Canada, and China plan to do their own analysis.
And futures are lower this morning. S&P futures down 4.5 points. Dow futures down 55. NASDAQ futures down about 13. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd. Yield 2.49%. And the yield on the 2-year, 2.33%. And the yen at 111.46. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Now to find out what else is going on around the world, we say good morning to Bloomberg's John Tucker.
And good morning, Nate. U.S. Homeland Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen is out. Details this morning in this report from Bloomberg's Ed Baxter.
The president has blamed her for the rise in migrants entering the U.S. illegally, and following his meeting, he tweeted, Secretary of Homeland Security Kirstjen Nielsen will be leaving her position. I would like to thank her for her service. Mr. Trump also tweeted, Kevin McAllinan, the current U.S. Customs and Border Protection Commissioner, will become acting secretary. Sources to Bloomberg say the president wants a strong law enforcement type figure in charge of Homeland Security because he associates the sprawling department mostly with border issues, not with its other missions such as cybersecurity, airport screening, and natural disaster response. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The House Ways and Means Committee chairman is demanding the IRS release 6 years of President Trump's personal and business tax returns. But appearing on Fox News Sunday, the acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney says Democrats will never see the president's returns.
Oh, no, never. No, nor should they. Keep in mind that that's an issue that was already litigated during the election. Voters knew the president could have given his tax returns. They knew that he didn't, and they elected him anyway.
Attorney General William Barr has promised to provide a more complete summary of the Mueller report in just a few days. A four-page letter written on March 24th by Barr quotes from Mueller's report saying the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government. But Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer told reporters yesterday it's also about national security.
But when you're talking about Russia interfering, we should know everything so we can stop it from happening from Russia, Iran, or any other bad country.
And the Trump administration has issued a stern warning to Libyan militia leader Khalifa Haftar to halt his forces' advance on Tripoli and urging all sides to continue with political negotiations. Secretary of State Michael Pompeo said in a statement late yesterday, the U.S. was deeply concerned about the warlord's threat to the internationally recognized capital. He said the military campaign was endangering civilians and undermining efforts to resolve the dispute peacefully. Global News 24 hours a day on the air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Nate.
All right, John, thank you. It is 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashar.
Nathan, what a weekend for the Nets. Back-to-back road wins, first at league leading Milwaukee, then at playoff-bound Indiana, 108-96. And with that win, Kenny Atkinson's Nets clinched a playoff berth.
Fantastic. I mean, the guys are obviously happy. It, you know, long road, a lot of tough games, especially to finish the season. But I'm just glad in, you know, kind of the way we did it, you know, here against a tough Indiana team on the road, on a back-to-back, which we've, you know, struggled with in the past. So it's a just a wonderful way to qualify for the playoffs.
Their opponent yet to be determined. The Knicks' last game at the Garden, a rare win, 113-110 over Washington. The Warriors with a win clinched home court advantage in the West. It was their last regular season game at Oracle Arena. The Rockets set an NBA record last night. They made 27 three-pointers. Baylor hung on, top Notre Dame 82-81 to win the NCAA Women's Championship. Nearly blew a 17-point lead. The Irish missed a free throw that would have tied the game. Men's final tonight. It could be very low scoring. Virginia and Texas Tech, two of the three best defensive teams in the nation. The Islanders got word their first playoff game with Pittsburgh will be Wednesday at the Nassau Coliseum. 7 home runs by the Yankees in Baltimore, and 5 came from guys coming off a disappointing 2018. Gary Sanchez, only 18 homers last year. He hit 3 yesterday. And Clint Frazier, who won Saturday's game with a home run, came back with 2 more. He had 4 hits. The Yanks won 15-3. 12 Mets walks led to 12 Washington runs. The Nationals led 12-1. Pete Alonso, Michael Conforto with 3-run homers to make it much closer, but the Nationals hung on 12-9. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. And in sports entertainment news, another big financial success for WrestleMania, and this time it's due in large part to women. World Wrestling Entertainment put 3 women in the main event of their flagship pay-per-view for the first time ever, and the result? The second highest grossing event in WWE history at $16.9 million. Futures pointed lower ahead of the open. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's brought to you by MBAF, CPAs and advisors dedicated to solving complex tax and accounting challenges, identifying opportunities, and helping businesses maximize profits. Learn more at MBAFCPA.com.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Investors are kicking off the week in a cautious mood, with European stocks and U.S. stock index futures edging lower and government bonds drifting as progress toward a trade deal between the U.S. and China continues to drag. Oil is rising as fighting in Libya raises the risk of supply outages. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 5 points. Dow futures down 65. NASDAQ futures down 15. The DAX in Germany is down 0.5%. 10-year Treasury, little change. Yield 2.49%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.33%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.5% or 30 cents to $63.38 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.5% or $5.90 to $13.01.50 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1233 against the dollar, the yen at 111.46. And at 10 o'clock Wall Street time, we get reports on factory orders and durable goods orders. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John, good morning.
And good morning, Karen. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen has been ousted. A source of tension, the growing number of Central American families crossing the southern border. Well, President Trump announced in a tweet that the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Commissioner will be taking over as the acting head. The tax tug of war continues between the White House and House Democrats. The Ways and Means Committee has requested the IRS hand over 6 years of President Trump's personal tax returns. The acting White House Chief of Staff, Mick Mulvaney, vowed that will never happen. And the Post Office has announced it's going to issue a forever stamp commemorating former President George H.W. Bush. The stamp will be issued at his presidential library and museum in College Station, Texas, on the 41st president's birthday, June 12. And in Bloomberg Sports, it's the men's basketball college championship tonight. Virginia plays Texas Tech. The Nets, Knicks, Warriors win. The Celtics and Wizards lose. In a baseball action, the Yankees and Red Sox win. The Nationals beat the Mets. The A's lose. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. It's coming up to 5:20 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. Joining us as we get set for a new trading week this morning, Lori Calvasina, head of U.S. Equity Strategy at RBC Capital Markets. Nice to talk with you this morning, Lori. And we're hearing positive signs from both sides on U.S.-China trade, yet futures are pointing to a lower open this morning. What's holding investors back?
Well, you know, I think one of the big reasons for the rally this year has been progress towards a trade deal with China. And in fact, we just did an investor survey at the end of March, and we asked people, when do you think a trade deal with China is going to get done? We actually found that 38% said it was going to happen by 3Q, 31% 2Q. And so we think that investor expectations have really just already moved to getting the deal done relatively soon.
So then you think a positive trade outcome is baked into this market at this point?
I don't think it's 100% baked in, but I do think it's largely baked in. You know, we look at that 3Q stat where 38% thought the deal would happen next quarter, not this quarter. So yeah, there's a little bit of good news still to be baked in. If you sort of solve for the big weight on CEO confidence that's been overhanging the market this year, I do think it helps. But to sit here and say this hasn't been priced in a big way, I just don't think is quite right.
What about concerns about global growth lingering? I mean, if there is a deal in the offing in the third quarter between the U.S. and China, does that sort of lift the concern about where global growth could be headed?
I do think it helps very much longer term. I think in the shorter term, there's still an issue of how much has a corporate CEO confidence, CFO confidence really retreated? Has that impacted CapEx expectations? Has that impacted hiring? There's still some short-term considerations. We should get some color on that fairly soon in the next reporting season. But I do think it helps, but we just have to be mindful of some of those short-term issues.
Well, what sort of short-term issues are you looking at then?
Well, you know, it's what we mentioned in terms of have corporates, you know, do they stop spending on software, for example? Do they, you know, invoke things like buyouts or hiring freezes? We actually noticed in 4Q, in that reporting season, there wasn't so much of an impact on CapEx, but we did actually see companies talk a bit more about doing hiring freezes and layoffs.
What do you see coming up in the next earnings reporting season as we get that kicking off here?
So I think the big thing investors need to look for, and frankly, the thing I think they will be looking for, is confirmation that the underlying macro and demand picture are intact. And I think we generally saw that in the 4Q reporting season, but I think the big problem we've been having lately with all this economic data that's come in negatively surprising is, you know, we've been in the middle of this rough patch in the economy. Investors want to see confirmation that it is very much a rough patch, and this is not something that is going to continue to drag lower in the middle part of the year. So I think that's one of the big things we need to be looking for.
Does the jobs report that came out on Friday, that was pretty good upside to that jobs report, does that give a little bit more clarity to whether we're out of the soft patch at this point?
I think it helps. I mean, I think we need to see continued things like that. And so far, you know, that's generally what the economic data has been doing. It'll hit an air pocket for a month, usually not 2 months in a row, and rebound pretty quickly. So I do think it's definitely a step in the right direction, but we do need to see more things like that.
So do you think then the Fed is in the right position at this point to continue to keep rates on pause? I mean, the administration is putting a lot of pressure on the Federal Reserve to cut rates at this moment.
Now, I think the Fed has signaled that they're being data dependent. I think they've signaled that they're being patient. I think they've signaled that they're listening to markets. And I think they've signaled that they are paying attention to all this bumpiness in the global macro and its potential reverberation down the line. I think investors wanted the Fed to be more forward looking, and that's what they're doing. You know, I'm not in the camp necessarily that says we're going to see Fed cuts by the end of the year. I do think that's where some of the big bullishness has been coming the last few weeks. The thing that we've been telling investors is that the Fed is signaling data dependence, and if they cut, it will be for a reason. We think it is probably a reason that investors would not like, i.e. the macro underlying revenue, you know, kind of backdrop is deteriorating, which would probably be accompanied by a cut in earnings expectations. So, you know, we are not in that cut camp right now, or frankly in the camp that would be excited about it.
All right, only about 30 seconds left. How much more upside do you see in the S&P 500 this year?
You know, I think we've got a little bit. I don't think we have a ton of room. We recently tweaked our target higher to 29.50. We are expecting a healthy earnings growth of about 5%, but modest multiple expansion.
Lori Calvesina, head of U.S. Equity Strategy at RBC Capital Markets. Always great to talk with you. Thanks for being here with us on Bloomberg Daybreak on this Monday morning. Pointing to losses, looking at the futures contracts ahead of the open. S&P futures down 5 points at the moment. Dow futures down 64 points. NASDAQ futures lower by nearly 16 points. And you are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And for breaking news, wherever you are, Bloomberg and Twitter bring you TikTok, the first global news network designed for social media, offering live video coverage and hourly updated top news reports verified by Bloomberg at TICTOC on Twitter.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Stocks are lower to kick off the trading week, a week that begins with the S&P 500 coming off a six-month high. We are also seeing oil extend its recent gains. There's been an escalation of fighting in OPEC producer Libya, and Morse, global head of commodities research at Citigroup, predicts crude will continue heading higher.
Our spot price for this 0 to 3 month period of time is 75. It looks like that's easily going to be reached.
Checking oil right now, NYMEX crude oil higher, up 0.6% at $63.44 a barrel. Brent up 0.6% at $70.77.
Saudi Aramco is set for a mega debt deal this week. The state-owned oil company and its bankers are preparing to kick off what could be a $10 billion bond offering.
President Trump's top economic advisor says the U.S. and China are closing in on a trade deal. Larry Kudlow says negotiators will be doing a lot of teleconferencing this week after 2 weeks of talks.
There are issues outstanding, not least of which are going to be enforcement-related issues. But in each and every place, A, they've acknowledged their problems. That was a very big hurdle. And B, what wasn't on the table is on the table. And C, we're getting closer and closer.
Kudlow, speaking on CBS Face the Nation, heard right here on Bloomberg Radio.
At 10 a.m. Wall Street time, the U.S. government issues data on factory orders for March. Economists forecast the first decline in 3 months. Vinny Del Giudice reports.
Preliminary data on February durable goods orders showed demand for business equipment declined for the third time in 4 months. That will probably show up again in today's report, adding to signs economic growth is cooling. Factory employment has been trending lower since November, according to government data issued last week, and actually declined in March for the first time since 2017. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinny, thank you. Shares of BMW are down 0.5% this morning. The luxury carmaker warning of a probable first quarter charge exceeding $1.1 billion. It's related to a European Union investigation into alleged collusion by German automakers to delay the rollout of cleaner emission cars. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day. On Bloomberg, S&P futures are down 4 points, Dow futures down 57, NASDAQ futures down 13. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, the yield 2.50%, and the yield on the 2-year at 2.33%. COMEX gold is up 0.4% or $5.60 at $1,301.20 an ounce. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and John Tucker's here with more of what's going on around the world. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Nathan. President Trump's Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen is leaving that post. President Trump tweeting that the Customs Commissioner will be the acting secretary. Last June, it was Nielsen who defended the administration's zero-tolerance immigration policies. Despite a firestorm over the separation of immigrant families, Nielsen denied that politics at the time was playing a role in the controversy.
The children are not being used as a pawn. We are trying to protect the children, which is why I'm asking Congress to act.
According to people familiar with the matter, Nielsen resigned at the president's request after a meeting with him on Sunday at the White House residence. The tax return tug of war continues between the White House and House Democrats. The Ways and Means Committee has requested the IRS hand over 6 years of President Trump's personal tax returns, as well as some of his businesses. Last week, the Ways and Means Committee Chairman Richard Neal set an April 10th deadline for the IRS to turn over the returns. President Trump's personal attorney, Jay Sekulow, on ABC's This Week says it's not a law that he do so.
He said there's been a lack of transparency. He thinks the president should have put forward his tax returns before he announced or when he announced his candidacy for president, which sounds interesting, but unfortunately, it's not the law.
Well, President Trump is the first president not to release his returns in over 40 years. Turkey's President Erdogan is set to visit Russia amid rising tensions with a NATO ally. Bloomberg's Simon Demirkan explains.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan will hold talks with his counterpart Vladimir Putin in Russia amid a controversial missile deal between the two nations, one which threatens to further deteriorate ties between Turkey and the U.S. In Istanbul, Simon Demirkan, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The Trump administration has issued a stern warning to the Libyan militia leader Khalifa Haftar to halt his forces' advance on Tripoli. And he's urging all sides to continue with political negotiations. The Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said in a statement that the U.S. was deeply concerned about the warlord's threat to the internationally recognized capital. And the U.K. has joined a growing global backlash against technology companies such as Facebook and Twitter, proposing fines and bans if social media platforms fail to curb illegal activity. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. It's 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashower.
Nathan, the Nets don't have any big stars. They had some serious injuries this season, and yet the Nets are going to the NBA playoffs. First time since 2015 they clinched. With a 108-96 win at Indiana, they've only won one playoff series over the last 11 years. They'll face either Toronto or Philadelphia. The Knicks hadn't beaten Washington at the Garden in 6 years. They rallied past the Wizards 113-110. Mario Hezonja scored 30 points. NCAA Women's Championship game looking early on like a rout for Baylor. Notre Dame came from 17 down to take the lead, but fell just short at the end.
Baseline entry to come from DeeDee Richards. 82-81 Baylor. Richards, near corner, pass tipped by Turner, out of bounds, and that's it! She tipped the entry, but enough time ticks away, and Baylor is the national champion, 82-81, a thriller over Notre Dame and Tampa.
Westwood One NCAA Radio had a third title for the Bears. Neither Virginia or Texas Tech have ever won the men's title. Virginia's had two straight extremely close calls to get to tonight's championship game. The Red Raiders, meanwhile, have won their tournament games by an average of 15 points. The two face off tonight in Minneapolis. The Islanders have won only one playoff series the last 24 years. They will meet Pittsburgh, who has won two of the last three Stanley Cups. The Isles have home ice. The series starts Wednesday at the Nassau Coliseum. Yankees with a 15-3 rout in Baltimore to complete the sweep. Seven home runs, most by the Yanks in a road game since 1961 in Boston. Gary Sanchez hit three, Clint Frazier two. Mets were down 12-1, ended up falling to Washington 12-9. 12 Met walks, seven by Zach Wheeler. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan.
Thank you, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on unicorns spreading fear of an end to the bull market. Also in this week's issue, how Microsoft is making a bigger push into the video game business. Garrett DeVink wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
They've been in gaming for years, right, with the Xbox business. That's a business that they want to make sure doesn't get, you know, destroyed by this cloud gaming. So they want to be right at the center of it.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Khoury. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Nathan. American Dream, the long-delayed mega mall that's supposed to open this fall off the New Jersey Turnpike, will feature helicopters to fly in shoppers from Manhattan, but it lacks tenants, especially high-end fashion boutiques. New York Post says the developer Triple Five Group is making a final push now to fill empty space. New York lawmakers are looking at oversight of for-profit colleges. The state Senate's Standing Committee on Higher Education is supposed to hold a hearing Wednesday in Albany on the current level of regulations for on for-profit colleges and trade schools with a focus on whether changes would better serve students. And rapper 50 Cent's massive Farmington, Connecticut mansion is finally sold. The selling price, according to the Wall Street Journal, $2.9 million. That's 84% less than the asking price 12 years ago. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
All right, Ed, thank you. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Podisk, and on KNX in Los Angeles, we're talking about Fiat Chrysler teaming with Tesla to meet European emissions targets.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that hog futures touched their highest prices since 2014 as trade optimism raises hopes for more Chinese buying.
I'm Anna Edwards on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following the plan from British regulators to penalize tech giants like Facebook and Google for harmful online content.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. Warren Buffett is urging Wells Fargo to look outside Wall Street for a new CEO.
And those are some of the stories that our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. The morning pointing to losses as we kick off a new trading week, looking at the futures contracts. S&P futures are nearly 5 points lower, though. That's a drop of 0.1%. Dow futures down 57 points, 0.2% lower. NASDAQ futures down 14 points. That is a drop of nearly 0.2%. 10-year Treasury, little change. The yield, 2.49%. 2-year Treasuries at 2.33%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.5% or 31 cents at $63.39 a barrel. Stay with us. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Daybreak is on Bloomberg Radio, streaming live 24 hours a day on the Bloomberg Business app, radio.com, the iHeartRadio app, and Bloomberg.com.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Investors are kicking off the week in a cautious mood with European shares and U.S. stock index futures edging lower and government bonds drifting as progress toward a trade deal between the U.S. and China continues to drag. Oil rising as fighting in Libya raises the risk of supply outages. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 4.5 points. Dow futures down 57. NASDAQ futures down 14. The DAX in Germany is down 0.5%. 10-year Treasury, little change. Yield 2.49%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.33%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.5% or 29 cents to $63.37 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.4% or $5.70 to $13.0130 an ounce. The euro, $1.1236, and the yen, 111.43. And at 10 o'clock Wall Street time, we get reports on factory orders and durable goods orders. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
And good morning, Karen. Secretary of Homeland Security Kirstjen Nielsen will be leaving her position. Sources tell Bloomberg President Trump asked for her to resign during a White House meeting yesterday. Mr. Trump has tweeted that Kevin McAleenan, the current U.S. Customs and Border Protection Commissioner, will become the acting secretary. The Trump administration has issued a stern warning to a Libyan militia leader to halt his forces' advance on Tripoli and urging all sides to continue with political negotiations. The acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney vows that members of Congress will never see Donald Trump's tax returns as Democrats and the president's allies spar over whether lawmakers have the right to request them. And Bloomberg Sports, it's the men's basketball college championship tonight. Virginia plays Texas Tech. The Nets, Knicks, Warriors win. The Celtics and Wizards lose. In baseball, the Yankees and Red Sox win. The Nationals beat the Mets, and the A's lose. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios, where it's 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan joins us from our London bureau. Jen, let's begin with Therese Raphael's latest on Brexit with the headline this morning, Remainers, Be Careful What Brexit You Wish For. Of course, Theresa May is in the midst of cross-party talks, getting ready to ask for a short extension. So why are Remainers feeling smug at the moment?
Well, there's two things. One is that there is almost no prospect now of Britain leaving the European Union without a deal. And now, second, if Parliament can agree on a deal before the elections before the European parliamentary elections on May 23rd, Britain will very likely end up with a much closer relationship with the EU than what leavers want. Perhaps there could be a customs union or even staying in the single market itself. If not, then Britain's exit date will face a prolonged delay or even potentially a referendum, which could in fact see Brexit reversed.
All that sounds good for the Remain camp, but as we say, Therese Raphael is writing that Remainers should be careful what they wish for. Why?
Well, Europe looks really increasingly weak and divided and rudderless. And so if this persists, the argument from Brexiters that Britain's EU compromise was unnecessary and damaging, that's really going to gain some fresh momentum. I mean, take a look at some of the economic data we're seeing coming out of Europe lately. It's not good. For example, Germany's manufacturing base is really reeling from the slowdown in China's economy. The Eurozone itself never really got around to fixing what Raphael says is a potentially fatal flaw at its heart. There's never been a fiscal union that was set up to address the major imbalances in the region. And politically, there's a lot of division as well. You've got nationalist parties gaining ground. And all of this is grist for the Brexiter mill.
Right. So, I mean, these are problems that have gotten a lot of attention in Europe, right? I mean, is Raphael arguing then that Remainers aren't keeping these issues that are, so well known in Europe in mind?
They are. And, you make a really good point. I mean, this is not a new thing that there's a little bit of difficulty here in Europe. But the point that Raphael's making is that anyone who is on the Brexiter side that opposes any May Corbyn deal is just going to be weaponizing the EU and its various problems right now. Leavers are going to regard any kind of extension or a soft Brexit as a really serious attack on what they voted for and a sacrifice of what would have been. And if you think about it, the heart and soul that went into the Brexit debate, this vision will have died if we get a soft Brexit or Brexit gets killed in a referendum. And then what this means, Raphael says, is that Brexiters are never going to move beyond any kind of grieving acceptance stage. They're just going to be parked in anger and denial. You can already see the betrayal narrative kind of gaining ground here in the UK. Nigel Farage, who used to head the UKIP party, has set up a Brexit party to run in the European elections. And so one Brexiter has warned this is really going to suck voters away from the Conservative Party.
All right. So with the Brexit deadline potentially in flux here, Julian Lee is focusing on a deadline that's a little harder fixed. And this has to do with Iran and the oil market, something President Trump is taking a look at.
That's right. So when sanctions came into effect for Iran, 8 countries were granted waivers to continue buying Iranian oil. So now these waivers are going to expire next month, and Trump has got to decide what to do. He's got to decide whether or not to extend these waivers or to roll them over. And so the trap he's sort of caught in is he wants to undoubtedly increase pressure on Iran, but in doing so, by extending the waivers, he could risk stoking, or by killing the waivers, rather, he risks stoking oil prices and with them gas prices.
But how important were these waivers, really? I mean, as I remember, they were only given to 8 countries, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And 3 of them never really wound up buying any oil anyway. But if you look at the exports that had come out of Iran, they've been ticking up of late. And then if you can compare what exports were under Donald Trump sanctions versus what they were under, President Obama. President Trump's sanctions don't really look like they've been all that much tougher than those of Obama.
So then why then can't Trump just go harder on Iran and just not renew the waivers?
Well, you've got gas prices rising, and that's going to be a really serious source of concern for him, especially with elections coming up. Complicating the idea is that output from Venezuela is in a really fraught situation, not just because of the sanctions, but we've got rolling blackouts that are causing oil to actually seize up in the pipelines. You've been mentioning the military forces in Libya potentially advancing on Tripoli. I mean, they're obviously not there yet, but there's a major escalation of violence going on that is also going to threaten output. So this really raises some pressure on global oil supply, and so Trump's got to figure out what he wants to do. What Lee suggests that he might continue is leaning on Saudi Arabia Arabia and the rest of the OPEC group to raise output. So we might see more tweets from him in that regard.
All right. Bloomberg Opinion Editor Jennifer Ryan, thanks as always. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It's 5:54 on Wall Street. It is time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It's brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute, resolve faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Superstar goalie Hope Solo's pay discrimination lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation is on hold until a separate federal panel decides whether to combine her claims with those brought by her teammate Alex Morgan. A federal appeals court has ruled that historian Stuart McKeever can have access to grand jury evidence in the 1957 indictment of an FBI agent. Experts say the decision could make the public wait longer to see special counsel Robert Mueller's report. And Subaru has been hit with a class action that alleges windshields on certain cars are prone to crack, chip, and fracture.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Steve, thank you. Now another legal story we're watching. Elon Musk seems to have come out on top in his latest battle with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The SEC had asked a judge to find the Tesla CEO in contempt of court for violating an October settlement over his tweets. But the judge is kicking the conflict back to the two parties to work out their differences. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks with Wayne State University law professor Peter Henning.
Judges much prefer, especially in civil cases, that the parties work it out among themselves. So I think calling it a punt is probably the best way to describe it, that she has said, if you really want me to decide, you can force me to by not agreeing. But I think her very strong preference is that she doesn't want to hold Musk in contempt, nor does she want to smack down the SEC. So I think she's very much hoping that they will come up with some compromise that she can then sign off on.
So it appears the SEC's reading of the agreement was too restrictive, and Musk's reading would just undermine the agreement in full. So is it going to end up somewhere in the middle?
Oh, I certainly suspect. And I think the key question is whether Elon Musk is willing to compromise, because he's shown some rather substantial disdain for the SEC, but can his attorneys convince him that let's come up with something that essentially works as a face-saving device for both sides? And then the judges, at least she signaled that she would be willing to sign off on that if the parties can agree. So I think we'll see something, maybe somewhere in the middle. I'm not sure who's going to get to crow about it, but certainly I don't think we'll see major changes to the settlement agreement.
That's Wayne State University Law School Professor Peter Henning speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. This is Bloomberg.